Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Tuesday, December the 5th. Let's begin on the front page. Man acted in self-defense. A man who allegedly stabbed a machete-wielding man in self-defense during an altercation Saturday at a Bloomington mobile home park has not been charged in connection with the death. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers said Monday the incident involving the death of Cullen Hedrick, 21, of Bloomington, remains under investigation, but so far the only criminal charges filed involve a woman who allegedly spat on a rescue worker following the incident. Brittany Mikesell, 22, of the 400 block of East Monroe Street, Bloomington, screamed loudly during a bond hearing Monday, conducted via a video link with jail, after she apparently learned that Hedrick, who was her boyfriend, had died of the stab wounds. Authorities have not identified the man who stabbed Hedrick. This is an ongoing investigation, and at this point, this is where we're at, Chambers said of the charges against Mikesell, who was jailed in lieu of posting $10,000 and $35. A probable cause statement read in court by Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon stated Mikesell and Hedrick went to a mobile home in Cardinal Ridge Mobile Home Park, formerly Southgate Estates, with the intention of confronting someone. Witnesses told police Hedrick exited a vehicle armed with a machete and his face covered with a mask or bandana. The unnamed third party, who arrived at the mobile home park after they did, said Mikesell and Hedrick started an argument with him, and Hedrick struck his vehicle with the machete while he was still inside, according to the statement. After Mikesell allegedly sprayed the third party with pepper spray, he left his vehicle with a knife that he carried with him. He stated, while he was on the ground, he heard the swish of the machete as Hedrick swung the machete around him multiple times. After one of those swings and acting in self-defense, the other individual was able to come up off the ground and stabbed Hedrick in the chest, Rigdon said. Rigdon alleged Mikesell threw the machete from the vehicle as she drove to the hospital where Hedrick died a short time later, but Mikesell contradicted that during the bond hearing. It was him who threw it out, Mikesell told Associate Judge William Yoder. Hedrick was pronounced dead at 1:23 p.m. Saturday at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center Emergency Room in Bloomington, said McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis in a statement released on Sunday. In her first interview with police, Mikesell became agitated and tied her shirt around her neck, according to the statement. During her struggle with officers and rescue workers, she spat on an emergency medical technician, according to Rigdon. A December 15th arraignment is set for Mikesell. Bloom Community School takes root. Elementary set to move into cottage in Normandy Village. It's been nearly 40 years since the voices of children echoed in the cottages and on the lawns of Normandy Village in Normal. Come January, children will return as Bloom Community School puts down roots in a cottage at 11 Normandy Drive. It's charming. It's a place for children to be children and imagination and curiosity to drive their learning process. That's clearly reflected in the unique architecture of the buildings, big trees, playhouses, and green space, said Laura Colmes, founder and director of Bloom Community School. Colmes organized the elementary school earlier this year, starting its inaugural semester in August. Curriculum at Bloom Community School is project-based, with most lessons including trips to local businesses, museums, and libraries. Colmes said the students in kindergarten through fifth grade have some discretion in what the learning process looks like, and the teachers facilitate their ideas. The school, with 27 enrolled students and three full-time teachers, currently occupies three classrooms at the former Bloomington Junior High School at 103 East Washington Street in Bloomington. We love the centrally located diverse services at the current location, but the uncertainty of the redevelopment of the property and our need to expand is what led us to move, said Combs. Combs said that she always had an eye on the cottages at Normandy Village, and when a unit opened up, she quickly swept in to work with Normandy Village co-owner Bob Broad. We are absolutely thrilled, said Broad. Bringing kids back to the village is important to us. When these were first built, the cottages were dorms where students dined, slept, and were educated. Built around 1931, the cottages were originally part of the Illinois Soldiers and Sailors Children's Schools. Established in 1865, ISSCS began as a home and school for children of disabled and deceased Civil War veterans. After housing and educating children for more than a century, the facility closed in 1979. Demolition of the main administration building began in July, but several of the buildings have been preserved as private homes, businesses, and community centers. Bloom Community School will become the second educational facility on the ISSCS grounds, joining Mulberry School for preschool through second grade at 1101 Douglas Street. After a few restorative upgrades are made to the cottage, Bloom Community School will move in over holiday break. The L-shaped building includes two large open rooms, which will be used as main learning spaces. Smaller rooms will be staff offices and quiet study spots for students. A full kitchen and restrooms also are on site. School officials hope to install a reading loft in one of the wings. The original charm is preserved through arched doorways, lofted ceilings with exposed beams, a fireplace, and vintage murals. The window-lined walls frame the outdoor classroom where students will explore, including the nearby University of Illinois Extension Food Forest. The main room in the building feels like a living room and contributes to the sense that learning can happen in an inclusive and integrated environment. The best learning doesn't have to happen in a really sterile or hyper-technical environment, said Combs. The first semester for Bloom Community School was a learning process, said Combs, but she and her fellow educators are eager for the future of the progressive school. The initial chaos of starting a new adventure has quieted a little, but we're still trying to grow into that vision of Bloom Community School, which is cultivating joyful, independent learners, said Combs. I can't think of a better place to do that than here. County officials face opposition. 11 to have challenges in re-election in 2018. McLean County elected officials face an unusually tough road in the next year's elections. 2 years after 11 of 14 county elected officials on the ballot were re-elected without challengers, 11 of 13 have opposition in 2018 after nominating petition filings finished Monday. The races include incumbent Republican clerk Kathy Michael versus Democrat Nikita Richards, incumbent Republican treasurer Rebecca McNeil versus Libertarian Lex Green, Republican Jeremiah Houston versus Republican Gerald Thomas for a District 1 county board seat being vacated by Republican Don Cavallini, incumbent Republican District 2 county board member Jim Soldner versus Republican Jay Snyder, Democrat Dave Siebert, and Libertarian Paul Michael Enerson. Incumbent Republican District 3 County Board member Randall Martin versus Libertarian Chris Howick. Incumbent Republican District 4 County Board member Mark Johnson versus Democrat Logan Smith and Libertarian Alexandra Eagle. Incumbent Republican District 5 County Board member David Seltzer versus Democrat Elizabeth Johnston. Incumbent Republican District 7 County Board member Ryan Strichlow versus Democrat Sharon Chung. and Libertarian Bennett Morris. Incumbent Democratic District 8 County Board Member Paul Segobiano versus Democrat Shayna Wachinski and Libertarian Steve Seuss. Republican Jeremy Bradley, Democrat David Parker, and Libertarian Richard Bennett facing off for a District 9 County Board seat being vacated by Eric Rankin. Incumbent Republican District 10 County Board Member Chuck Erickson versus Libertarian Kevin Woodard. Republican Sheriff John Sandage and Democratic District 6 County Board Member Lori Wohlrab are unopposed. Races with only one candidate per party will go to the November 6 general election. Races with multiple candidates from the same party will be narrowed in the March 20th primary. 8 Libertarians filed compared to none during the same period in 2016 because the party is no longer limited by a rule that requires candidates who are independent or from political parties that are not established to file the following June. The Libertarian Party received recognition as an established political party in McLean County last November when, through the hard work of local volunteers, presidential candidate Gary Johnson finished above the 5% popular vote threshold in the county, Morris, the local chairman, said in a statement. Voters will be able to pull a Libertarian ballot in the primary for the first time ever. Nominating petitions can be challenged through December 11th. Write-in candidates can file through January 18th, and established parties can still choose or slate candidates for races where they don't have a candidate. State and federal races appearing on the McLean County ballot include Republican State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington versus Republican David Blumenschein of Normal and Democrat Ben Webb of Normal. Incumbent Republican State Representative Keith Summer of Morton versus Democrat Jill Blair of Bloomington. Republicans Todd Henricks of Sarasota, Dan Calkins of Decatur, and Randy Keith of Monticello competing in the primary to face Democrat Jennifer McMillan of Decatur for a state representative seat vacated by Bill Mitchell, Republican Forsyth. Democrats Eric Jones of Edwardsville, Betsy Londrigan of Springfield, John Ebel of Urbana, David Gill of Bloomington, and Angel Sides of Springfield competing to face incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville, incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Darren LaHood of Dunlap facing Republican Don Reince of Benson in the primary. In the Democratic primary for that seat are Brian Dieters of Morton, Junius Rodriguez of Eureka, and Daryl Miller of Danvers. State Senators Jason Berrickman and Bill Brady, both Republican Bloomington, are currently unopposed. Daily Digest. Offices open at 1 Uptown Circle. The Town of Normal's inspections and engineering departments have opened offices in the new building at 1 Uptown Circle. Hours of operation are 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Customers may use on-street parking or the parking deck directly south and attached to Uptown Station. Parking in the deck is free for 1 hour or validated as needed after an hour. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, December 5th, the 339th day of 2017. There are 26 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On December the 5th, 1952, the Great Smog of London descended on the British capital. The unusually thick fog, which contained toxic pollutants, lasted 5 days and was blamed for causing thousands of deaths. On this date, in 1782, the 8th President of the United States, Martin Van Buren, was born in Kinderhook, New York. He was the first chief executive to be born after American independence. In 1791, composer Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart died in Vienna, Austria, at age 35. In 1792, George Washington was re-elected president. John Adams was re-elected vice president. In 1831, former President John Quincy Adams took his seat as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1916, British Prime Minister Herbert H. Asquith resigned. He was succeeded by David Lloyd George. In 1933, national prohibition came to an end as Utah became the 36th state to ratify the 21st Amendment to the Constitution, repealing the 18th Amendment. Thought for today, all our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. Written by Walt Disney, American movie producer, born on this date in 1901, died in 1966. Today's Flick Fact Question. Something that truly changed the world occurred exactly 140 years ago today in Bloomington Normal. Do you know what that was? And the answer is, the first telephone call was made on December the 5th, 1877, from one building to another, when a call was placed from the Pantograph Building to the Western Union Telegraph Building at 202 North Center, today an office building just south of the downtown CVS store. That's only about 275 feet, but it was a monumental moment for communication. By 1900, an estimated 1,200 telephones were in Bloomington Normal, leading all the way up to today, when there's a phone in just about every pocket or purse. Children in crisis to benefit from collection. Community responds to stuff the bus drive. As Jamie Russell and other volunteers quickly unloaded a Connect Transit bus stuffed with donations for Children's Home and AIDS Crisis Nursery on Monday, she saw more diapers, baby wipes, stuffed animals, infant formula, baby food, and clothing. "I'm seeing families who will be affected by this," Russell said as she handed diapers into the outstretched arms of other volunteers. "I'm thinking about how many families this is going to benefit." Russell, Children's Home and Aid Program Manager for Family Support, was among 40 volunteers with that agency, Connect Transit, Amalgamated Transit Union Local 752, Great Plains Media, and Paul Davis Restoration, who unloaded a 40-foot-long Connect Transit bus outside Children's Home and Aid at 403 South State Street. The bus was nearly full of babies and children's supplies donated by shoppers when the bus was parked last week outside the Walmart stores in Bloomington and Normal and Kroger in Normal. It was the 15th annual Stuff the Bus Drive. While numbers of items donated won't be known until the counting and storing are completed later this week, volunteers who unloaded the bus and sorted donations in the crisis nursery on Monday agreed that donations appeared to be higher this year. "It's significantly more," Russell said. "Every year it keeps getting bigger. Our community as a whole saw families struggling during the state budget impasse," said Jeannie Higdon, Family Support Services Supervisor. "The community's generosity increased, and that has continued even with a budget. Last year, Stuff the Bus collected a record high 6,362 items. Financial contributions eclipsed the record high of 1,735 donated in 2015. Higdon reported that $4,538 had been donated this year in cash, gift cards, and checks, including $2,500 sponsorship check from Paul Davis Restoration. Children's Home and Aid is a caring local organization that everyone could get behind," Paul Davis Restoration owner and general manager Chris McConnell said as he helped to unload the bus. "It's good giving back to the community and giving kids a chance," added Chuck Sloan, Connect Transit Service technician and an ATU Local 752 member. "Donations will be used by children who are taken to the crisis nursery over the next year because they are at risk of abuse or neglect because of domestic violence, homelessness, mental illness, or other crisis. According to Tiffany Powell, Program Manager for Family Support Services, during the fiscal year that ended June 30th, the crisis nursery had 2,737 admissions for 202 children while providing 102 post-crisis home visits and 104 parent support group meetings. Starting the unloading on Monday were 18 students from Children's Home and Aid Scott Early Learning Center Preschool for All program. Among them was Gianna Poole, age 4, of Normal. "I carried in that toy puppy with the white fur and the brown fur," she said. "Why was she helping?" "It's for babies," Gianna said. Help is available. Families with children ages 6 and under who are in crisis can call Children's Home and Aid's 24/7 crisis line for nursery services at 309-834-5260. Faith in Action lifts hold on new clients. An organization that works to keep older adults independent has lifted its temporary hold on new applicants after attracting and training more volunteers. Faith in Action will resume accepting new care receivers age 60 and older beginning today. "I am elated to be able to recruit enough volunteers to open services to new care receivers, and I hope we can continue to serve new care receivers and recruit new volunteers," Faith in Action Director Doretta Herr told Pantograph on Monday. Faith in Action volunteers drive older adults to medical appointments, provide grocery shopping assistance, do friendly visits, and perform seasonal maintenance in Bloomington Normal, Hayworth, Hudson, and Towanda. But in October, Faith in Action put a temporary hold on new applicants because its increase in volunteers had not matched its larger increase in care receivers. Following a Pantograph article and other community conversations about the ban, 26 volunteers applied and were approved and trained, meaning that Faith in Action now has 457 volunteers, Herr said. An additional 11 volunteers are in the process of being approved. Faith in Action has 626 care receivers. Another 14 will be approved quickly after the ban is lifted, Herr said. One reason for the increase in care receivers and volunteers is because of increasing community recognition of Faith in Action and what it does. In the fiscal year that ended Thursday, Faith in Action volunteers provided 11,500 services, a 30% increase from 3 years earlier. People interested in becoming volunteers may call 309-827-7780 for more information. Normal approves property tax levy hike. Despite public opposition, Normal taxpayers can expect another property tax hike next year. The Normal City Council unanimously approved on Monday a $13 million property tax levy for 2017, which is expected to trigger a 5.9% property tax rate increase. The rate is expected to rise from $1.4115 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation to $1.4949 per $100 EAV for the taxes payable in 2018. The owner of a $165,000 home would see the town's share of their tax bill increase by about $40 to about $816. Officials said the increase is necessary to pay for police and fire employee pensions, but 11 town residents who spoke against the hike during a public hearing before the decision questioned that. "I think back to my years on the council, and I think every year we use the same excuse," said Parker Lawless, a former council member who served more than 20 years. "Residents don't want this. Speakers questioned both why the town isn't using other money to pay for pensions and why the town has spent money on specific projects, including public facilities and incentive agreements. You need to start saying no. I think you guys say yes way too much, said Jeff Hobb of Normal. Others questioned the town's return on investment for pension funds, which officials said are managed conservatively to avoid taking big risks with needed public money. The town manages the police and the fire pension investments, but state officials control other employee pension funds. Do some arm twisting to let these pension funds know that we're underperforming and we need to fix it, said Doug Sauer of Normal. Council member Chamberlain Cummings started the council's comments by reading selections of the state's pension code, which specifies that municipalities will keep up with pension costs from property taxes. I read through this to find, is there any other way? I could not find a single way, she said. We're left to make the hard decision and take the whipping from our constituents. Council member Kevin McCarthy asked the residents to take their concerns to the state representatives, who could change a requirement that municipalities fund 90% of their pension obligations by 2040. Governor Bruce Rauner previously told the Pantograph that he won't push for that to change. We don't get to set the rules, we just have to pay for them, said McCarthy. Council members said they don't take the increase lightly, in part because they also need to pay it. I've heard people say that we are raising your taxes. It's our taxes, too, said Council Member R.C. McBride. The town has asked employees to take early retirement and plans to make spending cuts as part of its fiscal year 2019 budget, which will start April the 1st and will be unveiled in January. For those who want to see some things cut, the cuts are coming, said McBride. They're coming because we have to do that, too. Police probe second home invasion. Police are investigating a home invasion that occurred early Sunday morning, the second over the weekend. Police were called at 12:04 a.m. to the 3000 block of Rudder Lane after a 44-year-old woman was told police her front door was forced open while she was sleeping. Police said three males entered the residence and one displayed a handgun and demanded money from the victim. The suspects took the victim's phone and fled. No injuries were reported. The investigation is ongoing. Anyone with information is asked to contact Police Detective Matt Dick at 309-434-2475 or email mdick@cityblm.org. If you want to remain anonymous, call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. If your call leads to the arrest and indictment of suspects, you may be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000. It was the second report of a home invasion over the weekend. In a Friday night incident in the 600 block of Turnberry Drive, a resident reported a man armed with a knife attempted to enter her apartment. The woman and a man who was with her inside the apartment fought off the man. Police later arrested Eric Schweitzer, 59, who appeared in McLean County Court Monday on a home invasion charge. He remains jailed in lieu of posting $20,000 and $35. He is scheduled for arraignment on December the 15th. Area calendar. Registration is being taken today at the Normal Public Library for Upcycled Book Page Ornament, which will be held 10 a.m. to noon on December the 21st. Registration is required. Today, from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Normal Public Library, there will be a program, How to Start a Writer's Circle. On Wednesday at the Normal Public Library, there will be a session, how to make handmade holiday cards from 5 to 8 p.m. It's a drop-in activity. Supplies will be provided and all ages are welcome, but under age 12, please come with an adult. We'll take a short break and return with the Pantograph soon.